Listening to the Noise Filter Daily Podcast. Dr. Derry and I have a daily show at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time where we go into more detail on stories and answer your questions about COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to NoiseFilterShow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.
In the 1980s, Portland, Oregon was a sleepy city that largely existed outside of the national spotlight.
Downtown Portland cleared out after 5 p.m. and city buses rolled through quiet streets populated by hobos, punks, drunks, drug dealers, and street kids. Some of these kids were targeted by white nationalists and became neo-Nazi skinheads.
Late one night in 1988, Mulugeta Sarah was beaten with a baseball bat and left for dead.
Three white kids who killed Sarah weren't outside agitators, but members of Eastside White Pride, a neo-Nazi street gang.
By the mid-90s, racist skinheads had disappeared from the streets of Portland. How did this happen?
It Did Happen Here is a documentary podcast that chronicles how immigrants, civil rights activists, and militant youth worked together with the diversity of tactics to drive white supremacist street gangs out of Portland.
The first episode will be released November 13th, the 32nd anniversary of the murder of Mulugeta Sarah.
Stay tuned.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we have a very special co-host with us now, Marcy Grace Frederick, who is now a co-host of Transpositive. And we're going to continue our conversation with Marcy about her coming out story, which is a really great story. So my name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
My name is Jean. I also use she and her pronouns.
And I'm Marcy Grace, and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. Welcome back, Marcy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for helping me, Doc. I have been thinking about this and excited to continue with the story.
Yeah. So when we first had you on last episode, you kind of told us your coming out story, coming out on the coast and, you know, starting the Central Coast Transgender Support Group and like all the great work that you do. You talked about your rape, and we were just getting to kind of, you're talking about like going to this church to kind of find some support. And I think that's kind of where we left off. But between now and then, I guess you've had some surgery.
I did. Yes, I had bilateral inguinal surgery, hernia surgery. So that was Tuesday, and I'm recovering and doing well from that. So,
well, bravo to you for coming on the air when you're in post recovery. I know that can be really challenging.
Yay.
Yes, it can. Yeah, it's good though. We're good. Okay, so you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
Okay. So, okay, so we were at the church. I had went there several times, attended the women's group, and after the third attendance of the women's group, I still felt uncomfortable once again. And about 6 months later, the lady that had invited me to that group actually attended one of my support group meetings for the trans support group, and came out as lesbian, and also proceeded to tell me that her church group asked her to ask me not to return because I wasn't a real woman. And so that's where I left off with that, with the last story, was being excluded and asked to not return to that church group. So after this happened, and after she told me what she said, she also said that I don't remember if this was at the same meeting, or I think this might have been a few weeks later, but she proceeded to tell me that she told them at church about her sexual identity, and they told her she could not attend the women's group meetings. They removed her from the childcare, helping with the childcare, and told her that she couldn't serve in any capacity. So they had completely removed her from anything that she had been involved or doing within the church. So she wasn't the only one. I've had several other queer and trans people that have attended that church, or have family members who have attended that church. I actually have a couple people who attend my support group that are trans. They are actually children, and so their parents attend that church. And so when I started hearing this stuff, I needed to find out exactly what their policy was on inclusion with the trans and queer community. So I set up an appointment to talk to the pastor of that church, and he met me. I arranged to have my friend, who is also a member of this church, which was a mistake, go with me to help support me. Right, you'll see where this goes. And so I arranged the meeting with the pastor and the assistant pastor there. We showed up, and it was about 2.5 hours of defending myself. I was misgendered throughout the whole thing. I was called a sexual deviant on several accounts. And I was told that I would not be allowed to serve in any capacity of the church, that if I wanted to be completely welcomed, that I would not be able to dress in any form that I was currently dressing in, and that I would basically have to detransition.
That's just awful, Marcy. I mean, to go to a church and a house of worship, like looking for support, and to really get the exact opposite of it, it's just unconscionable.
It was hard, and I think it was hardest because my friend, who has been there with me and through this transition from the beginning, sat there and allowed it to happen and didn't say anything throughout the whole 2.5 hours that we were there. Not one word, not one stitch, nothing. So that's I think that's what was really hard. So they asked me if they could pray over me. And at that point, I said yes. I probably should have said no, but I said yes, because, you know, I was still in that trusting space. But when I said yes, I also thought in my head, oh my God, I hope he just doesn't pray over me for my detransition. And that is exactly what he did. And he used those exact words that God would help me detransition, that I would see the light and the way and, you know, all this other stuff. And that was extremely difficult through that, because my friend also participated in that. So that was difficult. That sent me down a rabbit hole, which I had to fight to stay out of, because at one point before my transition, I was going to commit suicide. And this same friend that was sitting there supposed to be supporting me is the one that helped me get through that night that I was going to take my life. And so to not have that support at that moment from that same very person that helped save my life, it was difficult. And it's still difficult to this day, because I'm still friends with this person. Mm-hmm. But our friendship has never been the same.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a difficult part of my journey. And for the next year, I did not attend any type of services or attend church in any way. And it took me that whole year to walk into another church that has fully and completely accepted me.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first time we ever met Marcy, we met at the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. Can you talk about the role that religion can play in transgender people's lives and in your life? I mean, I know a lot of trans folks, Portland is kind of an atheist town. I mean, here in Portland, where we're broadcasting from, it's not really popular to go to church. Not very popular at all. But for a lot of trans folks, they do find religion to be something that's very meaningful and a deep source of connection for their transition. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It has been important, and it is important, and it can be very helpful, and it can be very harmful, depending on which way how people treat you within that church community. I going to that old church that kicked me out, basically, I decided to transition while going to that church because of the word that I heard the pastor speak. And so I felt really connected. But the thing is I was never involved in that church. There was never any interaction. No one actually ever came up to me or invited me. I had actually tried to volunteer for several different things throughout the years, but was never called upon to volunteer, even though there was times that they would be like, well, we still need volunteers. And I'm like, well, my name was on it, but you didn't call me. So, you know, you get a sense of being excluded, even though it's not blatantly exclusion. And so when you can have a faith or a community, a religious community, spiritual community that can help strengthen your faith, your belief within not just the spiritual realm, but within yourself, is so helpful. And I find that so many churches tear down rather than build up. And that's the problem. And that's why so many of us run from church. And I still, because of what happened to me 2 years ago, I still struggle. I'm still struggling. It shook my faith so bad that I still struggle with wondering how much of it is bullshit. What's, you know, what is it about? Is it real? Did any of it really happen? So I just have to really hold on to the belief values within my spirituality. You know, just be good and love and have empathy And so that's what I really try to go on. But it is very important. It can be very important, I think.
Marcy, to tier to your own verbiage in your story here just a moment ago, my own experience has me making a distinction, not a full separation, but a distinction between spirituality and religious practice. Spirituality and any given congregation, church, you know, structured religious practice. And for me personally, spirituality is, I would say, by far one of the most important aspects of my own transition, my own self journey. But I separate that from the sociological aspects that organized religion seems, I mean, obviously carries with it. So, you know, what are your meditations? What are your thoughts around, you know, my comment? Have you made that same distinction? How are you meeting your spiritual needs? You know, are you separating them? Have you been forced to separate them from those sociological benefits of the fellowship of being associated with a particular church? How's that going for you?
It's, I don't want to say it's going, it's been tough. I feel, with my spirituality, I'm very strong in, energy and the universe. And I don't know whether there is God. I know that there is some kind of greater spirit. I know, you know, we came from somewhere, we were created somehow, you know, you see life being created. But the aspect of church and that has been difficult. I do like the aspect of having the community, the family within that church, but that's not necessarily what it is that I go for. But it's very helpful. Organized religion, I'm not completely in favor for, and I think that's probably where my biggest struggle is right now, is because it feels like any church you go to is obviously organized religion. You know, it's not just spiritual, and so that tends to be a big difficult thing with me.
You're listening to Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with Marcy Grace Frederick. Marcy is a leader in the transgender community here in Oregon and is the organizer of the Central Coast Transgender Support Group, and lives out in the Central Oregon area. Marcy, what kind of options are there for trans folks? Like, I mean, I don't wanna say, don't go here, go there, that sort of thing. But like on the coast, I mean, where can trans folks go to find welcoming communities, welcoming congregations? I think that's an honest question I can ask.
Marcy, you said that you have recently found a congregation where you feel more accepted.
I have, and PFLAG, as far as like churches go, I know that PFLAG had already started or worked on that with Safe Spaces, and they had created some stickers and a few years ago and put those out. And I know that they went around to the churches. And when they first, I think it was 10 years ago, our PFLAG chapter started down here. And when they first started, they went around to the churches, and I think there was only one church in all of Lincoln County that was accepting and affirming of the LGBTQ community. Now, that's of the LGBTQ community. That's not talking specifically the trans community. Now, that's a different story. Now, we actually have, I think, 9 is the last number, 9 churches within Lincoln County that are accepting. Now, there's a whole lot of churches in Lincoln County, and it's not a lot. I just don't think that 9 churches throughout the whole of Lincoln County being accepting is a lot. Now, I forgot where I was going with this. What was your question again?
It was, I was wondering about welcoming congregations out on the Oregon coast.
Right.
You know, we're having the, in early November, we're going to do the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil Show. And we always do that every year before the vigil. And we have on a whole bunch of, you know, ministers and folks from Portland, and they're all called Welcoming Congregations. So I really hope you'll join us for that show, Marcy, because what you're saying is stuff that they need to hear. I mean, they need to hear what it's like for folks living on the coast and in rural Oregon, like if you're trans or non-binary.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, to get back to your question, yeah, we've been working on creating those safe spaces and going around and vetting people. I don't want to say that we've actually gone into, you know, beating the pavement just yet, but we're talking about it. And I've already talked to the Board of PFLAG and told them that I would like to go back around to all the churches that they went to and more, and then also not only speak to them about their policy on inclusion and acceptance, but also talk to them about trans issues, because, you know, I don't believe that when they went around to get the acceptance of these churches that they actually talked about trans issues. So that's something that I'm definitely going to be working on, to try to get more inclusion within the spiritual community. And then we're also working on doing that with the community in a whole, as far as restaurants and places and medical facilities, just to make sure that they are safe and that they are going to adhere to getting training and keeping up with that.
That is a community organizer.
Yeah.
If I have ever heard a community organizer say something, you just said it, because you're like, you're already thinking like, oh, here's the problem. Here's all the places I have to go. Here's what we have to do to educate them. Here's the other places we have to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so many.
Here's our handbook with all of the information in it. And here's how we're going to train you if you need training.
Oh, yes, yep. We're going to offer the trainings and everything, yep.
And
yep.
Of course, I bet you're doing it all for like $100. That's probably how much money you're making doing it.
Right now, I'm not making anything.
Right. You are a community organizer.
Spending $300 in gas.
Yes, thank you. Not to mention I just had to buy a car, because I've been doing this for the last 2 years, well, longer, but real hard the last 2 years. I've been doing this myself. I don't want to say completely myself, but basically my own means, and no vehicle. And when I started this out, I don't even think I had a phone. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have internet, computer, nothing. I had nothing when I started doing all this.
Wow.
Marcy, you know, just a moment ago, you were talking about, you know, interacting with some of the, you know, back to the congregations, the churches, meeting with the leadership. And actually, I guess what I took away from your comment was interviewing them. And what dawns on me is, you know, based on a simple question, are you welcoming? Well, I would imagine that there's a whole spectrum of interpretations to that question and a whole spectrum of answers. Well, what does welcoming mean? I suppose, you know, some congregations may be welcoming as long as you don't talk about it, you don't look queer, you don't act queer, you're not trans, you know. You know what I mean?
Right. That's why I try to use the word affirming.
Yeah. Because, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, language has a lot to do with it too. Sure, you're welcome. We'll pass the plate, put money in it. Come on in.
Yeah, it's tolerance is what their welcoming is. We will tolerate.
Yep.
And I'm worthy. We are all worthy more of being tolerated. And that's what I'm trying to educate the community on.
So what makes for an affirming church?
What makes for an affirming church? Someone who is going to see you and respect you for who you are, what gender you are, what sexual identity you are, what color you are, whether you're disabled or not. I mean, it's all, you know, there should be no exclusion or, you know, holding off or saying, oh, well, you can't do that because, you know, you don't quite fit in. No, it's a complete inclusion. It's a complete bring us in, wrap your arms around us, love us for everything, for who we are, not just, you know, the things that you think that you can love about us, and then everything you don't like or don't love about us. That's not love. It's either love all of me or none of me.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty high bar to set. Actually,
it is.
It's a high bar to set.
Isn't that what Jesus taught us?
Well, yes, absolutely. And I would hope that anybody who stakes a claim on, you know, being Christian, you know, would aspire to that. Or any other, you know, religion would aspire right. to, you know, the higher levels of that. But what crosses my mind is actually more of a sociological phrasing, but it's, you know, to, you know, take away from Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, at least, I mean, in terms of, you know, what it means to be, I don't know what, accepted or whatever, that you be judged by the content of your character.
Right.
By the content of your character. Because heaven knows if we aspired to fully, you know, achieve the levels of, I don't know, benevolence, compassion that we'd all like to, it wouldn't matter how you present. It wouldn't matter how you look. It wouldn't matter how you smell. It wouldn't matter whether it wouldn't matter. We, you know, you're welcome here. We would love you. I think we have to acknowledge that sociologically, humanly, with all of our flaws, there are barriers there. There are just barriers there. And so some places are going to be okay. Some people are going to be okay, others not, you know? And so the content of character, I think, has a lot to do with this as well.
Well, we're talking tonight with Marcy Grace Frederick. Marcy is a new co-host here at KBOO for Transpositive. And Marcy is also an organizer out on the coast with the Central Oregon Coast Transgender Support Community. And right now we're just hearing Marcy share with us her transition story. And we got onto the topic of churches and her experiences with churches.
Yeah, so that's pretty much, you know, the end of that story with the church. You know, I'm going to my church, and I try to go every Sunday. I'm not religious with it, but, you know, but there's still struggle. There's still struggle because of that. And so, you know, we move on and
Amen.
Just try to do the best we can and educate and, you know, live the best lives we can.
Well stated, Marcy, thank you.
So I'm trying to think what happened after the whole church thing. you got my, I'm stuck on the church. It's like, shoot, well, where else does the story go? I'm trying to think of where else my story goes. I continue with my transition. I had my surgery, my bottom surgery. I think I had talked about that. Yeah, because that was just before my rape. Mm-hmm. I've just been living life and being more involved within the community. I'm involved with the Central Oregon Coast Trans community. I sit on board of PFLAG. I'm involved with the Gender Health and Community Network. And then I'm also involved with the Coastal Equity and Inclusion Committee, and then several other community advisory committees. So I've just been living life. I think what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to date. I'm trying to find a partner and, you know, doing it, being trans and also doing it in the time of COVID is not the easiest, let me tell you. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Give me some suggestions.
Please share whatever you have with me, because
how do you date on the coast? Transgender aside, just how do folks date on the coast? Do you use apps? You know,
I don't know, because I've never dated, Emma. I've never really dated. I've never used apps. So right now what I'm doing is I've got my friend is trying to convince me into downloading a free app to do it free and everything, but it makes me nervous. Mm-hmm. But I am on a Facebook group. I don't know if it's proper to give their name out, but it's probably not. It's a singles group through Facebook. And so it's I don't want to say it's a challenge. It's new. It's a journey, and I'm trying to get practice because, I, like I said, I've never really dated, and so I don't have a whole lot of interaction around men, especially cis men, and so and they can tend to intimidate me, just because I think of the abuse that I've been through with them throughout my life. So I'm trying to break down those walls and be open and try to be confident. I'm working on getting over my shame with sexuality and sex, and I'm trying to discover and understand where that comes from and why. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot.
That is a lot
of layers to my transition and everything I'm going through.
Go ahead, Emma.
Oh, sure. I was just going to suggest, let's open it up like we did last week with our last, remember our guest last week, Jean, where we kind of opened it up beyond COVID and kind of just started talking trans stuff with our guest?
Yeah. Well, Marcy, I was about to say, having known you now for several years and arguably, you know, observed you from afar, you are such a wonderful, beautiful, competent woman and confident. Thank you. Or you wouldn't be doing so many of the things that you're doing. And so coming from that position of strength, of affirmation within your identity, I have a question.
Yes.
As you kind of venture out now in looking for possible, you know, relationships, are you being open about your trans identity, or are you choosing not to do that?
Yes, I'm absolutely being completely open. It's not necessarily what I start off with, obviously, but if you go, and I'm sure you've seen my page, my Facebook page, it shows on there everything I do, everything I'm involved in. So I don't keep who I am hidden. And if they want to know, and if they actually go and look on my page, they'll see I'm involved in quite a few trans and queer things. But I have run into the occasion where, and I didn't know, a guy actually stopped talking to me because I was texting. We weren't actually talking on the phone yet. We were texting and he just stopped, you know, ghosted me. And I assumed that he checked out my page finally and that was it. And come to find out, no, he actually didn't. But no, I will tell them before anything goes. Uh-huh. Anywhere, because I don't want to put myself in danger, and I am completely open with who I am. I mean, with what I do, and I talk about it, the subject just comes up.
Who wouldn't want to date you? A beautiful, smart, intelligent woman, an organizer, you know, just a brilliant mind. Who wouldn't want to date you?
Well, I don't know, but you know, there's been a few guys that have decided not to, and most recently there was one I was talking to, and I was supposed to go meet for a date, but the fires happened, and so we canceled, and then he got quiet for about a week, and I got in contact with him, and then I got the big old long text. I didn't even get a call that he's seeing somebody else. And I was completely under the impression he wasn't seeing anybody because I was set up by another friend. And so it was a little disheartening, but obviously he chose the cis girl over me.
Dating.
So what have you been doing? What are your thoughts?
I don't know whether I'm desperate or just, you know, I've evolved, or I don't know.
No, I think it's evolving, because Jean, I am discovering more about myself, and most recently I think, and this is how I'm identifying right now, is multi-orientated. And that is, I believe I'm biromantic, where I'm romantically interested in more than one gender, but not sexually. I'm only sexually attracted to men, the male figure. And so I'm trying to understand. Yeah, because I've always had attraction towards women and non-binary people, but that attraction was never sexual. But it was more than like a friendship feeling.
So when you say you're attracted to men, does that include trans men?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, trans men are the best. They really are.
I agree. They're hot. They're so hot.
Well, there's just, you know, there's a connection that I can have, that I get with a trans man that I don't get with a cis man. And that's because
of, oh, yeah, totally.
Our journeys. Yeah. Yes.
No, totally. It's amazing. It's like you see this person and they look like a man and they talk like a man. And but when they talk about stuff, you're just like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like,
you're so enlightened. Right.
Yes, exactly. It's just, it's incredible. I mean,
is this what woke really means? Oh my God.
Yeah, totally. Oh gosh, yeah. And they're so cute too.
That's what I need. I need a woke man, Jean. A woke man. Those are not easy to find.
Where are you?
Well, hopefully someone will be listening.
Maybe. My phone number is
You can Facebook friend me. Yeah. Eventually. Patience is not something I'm comfortable with, but I work on.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Trans Positive, and we've been talking tonight with Marcy Grace Frederick. Marcy is a new member of our collective, and Marcy lives out on the Oregon coast and does organizing with the Central Oregon Transgender Support Community. We've been talking about spirituality and also about sexuality. What is it like if you're interacting with a transgender person who sort of is a, like a trans femme type person, what is it okay to say and what should you not say to that person, like when you first meet them?
Let's say what's not appropriate. Don't discuss their surgeries or ask them about their surgeries. It's none of your business. Asking them their pronouns is a okay thing to do. If you don't know somebody's pronouns, use they and them. They and them are always a safe pronoun to use. It's universal, so it's non-binary.
Or their name.
I'm not sure what else. Yeah, and their name. Yep, always ask them their name, you know.
I think that part of the reason that I was wondering about this was because if you're dating and you're out on the Oregon coast, you must have to do a lot of educating, especially if you're, you know, you're so upfront, like you let people know from the beginning that you're transgender. And if they're open to it, then you might have to do some, do the people that you meet, do you have to do some educating with them, or are they already educated about like what it's like to date a transgender woman?
So far, it seems like I have to do a lot of educating when it comes to dating. There's, especially with men, they tend to come off being sexual. And a few times when I did come out to them as being trans, that it got sexual right away, you know, wanting, asking me to do sexual things for them. And so it's just, you know, and it's not that I'm not a sexual person. It's just not what I'm going to lead with. That's not what I'm about. I don't want to be looked at as a sexual object. You know, once we get to know each other, if that's what you want to look at me like, that's fine. But, you know, let's get to know each other first. Let's have some commonalities, some communication, some, connection.
How do transgender people deal with the expectation in transgender cis relationships that they're actually gay, or that they want them to do things that they identify with, like their experiences as queer men? How do we deal with that?
I don't know how we deal with that other than educating and trying to teach them about gender and sexual identity, because there is a difference. The gender and sex are not the same thing. Gender and sexual identity are not the same thing. And so we have to teach people that just because they're attracted to someone who is trans, they need to see that person as that gender. So like if someone were to date me, find out I'm trans and then think that, oh, they're gay, then they're not seeing me as a woman. They're seeing me as a man, and that's uncomfortable, and that's not right. That's wrong. I'm a woman. I'm all the way through. It's done. So education, I think, is the biggest key. I would really like to start getting into the schools, especially locally here, and making sure that they have education on gender, especially gender at an early age, because it needs to be talked about.
What institutions out on the Oregon coast are like the most open to trans, non-binary, queer folks? Like moving it beyond churches, just organizations generally. Like what are safe spaces for trans and queer folks
out on the Oregon? I'd say coffee shops. I know that there's a few places down on Night Beach. You know, you tend to flock around the people that are accepting, and it's usually the artsy people that are more accepting. The PAC is a really good place. The Performing Arts Center is a really good place for the queer and trans community.
What about, so it may be beyond your frame of understanding, and if it's an inappropriate question, please let me know, I will cut it out. But I'm wondering, what about the Native community, the Native Oregonian community? in the area, because there are several like spaces within the coastal area where you're talking about where Native folks live. What is their relationship with folks in their community who are Two-Spirit?
Some who are Two-Spirit. So I do know that community is out there and they are supportive. I just don't, and right now they're trying to make it more open. They're trying to involve the community, bring in the community, especially with the kiddos. And I know that they've set up some Zoom meetings and some, and before COVID happened, they were actually starting their own in-person support group meeting, which I actually went out to support. But they were not having good turnout from it. They were not at least not locally. I think that they have more turnout elsewhere, but here in Siletz and locally, I think that they're having a difficult time with the stigma of what trans and queer is. But I know that they are actively working on it and actively trying to involve the community and bring awareness to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that there's a tradition that's 13,000 years older than ours, that's been here the whole time, right? That, you know, has ways of, you know, relating to each other that are different from white colonialist domination, Eurocentric Christian, heterosexual, you know, framework for how to orient your identity.
Emma, I need to say to the audience and anyone out there who can hear me when I say this, aho. Aho. My own practice, which I've been engaged in for 6 years, and I need to be sensitive to how I express this, but it is a very Native American based practice, which my understanding is one that has been condoned, welcomed, opened to those of us who are not Native American, and so is not necessarily, hopefully, not necessarily viewed as appropriation, and, you know, inappropriate, but a sharing of Native American basic understandings. It's not a tribal practice, a little more generic. But I can tell you the reason that I've stayed with this practice is that the Native American belief system and description and verbiage around all of this is so much more enlightened. It is just so much more balanced. And anyway, I've found a very, very, very welcoming and cogent spiritual practice that I can relate to. Very affirming. In that, you know, approaching it from that direction. That's my experience out there.
Thank you, Jean.
Yeah. I'm so
yes,
glad
thank you.
That I've been welcomed there.
Mercy, can I change the topic for a minute? I'm wondering about the issue of wondering about the topic of trans youth out on the coast. How are the schools out on the coast with trans youth, with, like, you know, acknowledging that this is a reality, and with, you know, providing adequate support and guidance? And I think I just heard laugh, but I'm not
so,
sure.
I, So it's a struggle and it's sporadic. It's, you know, we've got, I think all the schools will say that they are working on it or, you know, are affirming and accepting. But from what I hear from certain schools, from certain kids that attend these schools, that they are not so welcoming and opening, or they are being tolerant of teachers being intolerant to students, you know, not using their correct gender or name. And so that can be difficult because I don't exactly know how to help, you know, other than reporting it and trying to do what we can. But, you know, it doesn't always get resolved. But it's difficult. I was trying to get into the schools more actively before COVID hit. And then when COVID hit, it kind of just threw everything for a loop and out the window. And so we're having to do things new ways. I'm working with the Bravery Center as well. And I know that they're creating a space for the LGBTQ community, the youth in particular, a drop-in center, resource drop-in center. So, and that will be going in Lincoln City. So we are working on it. I'm working on getting things better, but it's slow. It's slow right now. And it just, sometimes it seems like I'm not doing enough or I need to do more. And that can be difficult, but I try to be there for the kiddos. I try to make sure that everybody knows about my support group. I've been in touch with teachers and counselors and the schools. And so they all know about me, the GSAs and actually Bravery Center is actually working really close with the GSA up in Taft. So, that's been real hopeful and really good to see, because there's quite a few trans kids within our schools and our communities, and they need that support.
Marcy, can you describe, you know, kind of the approach that you are trying to bring to that interface with the schools and stuff? And, how are you approaching it as, you know, an adult? Now, pardon me, but I'm not aware whether or not are you a parent?
I am not, no. Okay.
So can you describe to me, you know, what your inroads are, what approach you are taking? What are you bringing to these groups?
So my inroads, the education and visibility is the two most important parts of what I feel I'm bringing. Getting into the schools, I don't want to say that that's been my main priority, because in the beginning it wasn't. It just had started becoming more prominent and important to me throughout this last year. I don't have an actual approach. I'm me and I go in there, I talk to people, I tell them my story, I tell them what I think needs to be changed and what needs to be done. And I hope that they can get hurt. I hope that they hear me. I work with all the other organizations such as Bravery Center and the Coastal Equity and Inclusion Committee and PFLAG, and I just try to work with these organizations and make aware how important that education on gender is, and how important it is that these kids who are kids see us now as adults, that can see us living and thriving and being happy, and also letting them know that there is support and that I'm always here, because I have talked to several kiddos that do not have supportive families at home, and it tears my heart out, because I just want to wrap them up in my arms and bring them home, because I know how much support can mean to a kiddo. And so I try to go to the schools, I talk, I tell my story, and I let them know that I'm here, that I'm here.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We're talking with Marcy Grace Frederick. She's a new co-host here on Transpositive, which is a show that upholds transgender and non-binary voices. So Marcy, Jane, we have about maybe 5 minutes or so left. We just want to give a chance to come back around to anything we haven't gotten to tonight. If there's anything that we've missed, Jane or Marcy, this is a great time to bring it up.
There was one topic that I think last show or the show prior to that, Emma, we've been talking thematically about the impacts of the pandemic on transition services in the medical community. And so Marcy, can you share, you know, any perspectives along those lines with your own experience?
Yeah, so there's been lots of things that have been put on hold within my transition during pandemic. I had my bottom surgery 2 years ago, but I need to have a revision, and I was supposed to have the consult on that revision in March when we went into lockdown, and so that was all canceled. This next week, I think Wednesday is my appointment to go up to Portland to get that consult finally. I've also had issues with filling my estradiol injection. I went 3 months without getting it filled. I just got it filled, and I was only able to get one vial filled. And that one vial should last me the 3 months, hopefully. I think it will. It's supposed to, the way it's written out, it's supposed to be thrown away after a month, you know, but sometimes we have to stockpile because, you know, stuff happens. Yeah. But so that's been put on hold. So it's been difficult. When it first started, all my my therapy had to go virtual. And I know that some people really need the physical contact to be present with somebody. And so that I know has also been difficult, not necessarily on me, but within our community. So there's been some struggles, but you know, within this pandemic, I've actually been able to help several people start their transition during this pandemic. And so that's also been helpful.
Wow, thank you. This has just been an incredible conversation, Marcy. I'm so glad you're with the show now.
I am too. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Any last questions? Any last thoughts, Jane, Marcy?
I'm going to leave that to Marcy.
Marcy, if people want to find the... if people want to find the Central Oregon Transgender Support Group, where can they find it on Facebook?
Yes, it's Central Oregon Coast Trans Community. And we have both a private and a public page. So when you go and check those out, make sure you check them both out. The private page is more for things that I don't want to go public, you know, it may be events and things that we have, or if you have questions or concerns, you know, you can type those in and ask those. And then we have our public page, which all events get posted on, and then all my good stuff that I do. And then if anybody's out there that needs to reach or wants to reach out, you can reach me at mkf8475@gmail.com, or send me a message on Facebook, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Great, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Jane, thank you for joining us.
Emma, as always, thank you for all that you do in putting this together and keeping the thread being woven into this beautiful tapestry.
Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
Good night. Good night.
I'm out in A-Town, then I'm up in Chi-Town, or Miami shutting down. It's that New Orleans, it's LA or the Bay, it's New York, Philly, and the whole DMV. I'm a Detroit player, man, it's North South Cat, Ohio, Pittsburgh, got St. Louis on deck. It's Delaware, Connecticut, it's New Jersey, got hella this Queens, Brooklyn, and yeah, they rallying, Bronx, Harlem, and Staten Island.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Are you still looking for a way to fit KBOO into your year-end giving? KBOO is in